Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
So, this alligator snapping turtle, this thing is prehistoric. It just looks...
What can they teach us?
If they could only talk, think about that. They were here before Disney came in, right? They
were probably...
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
All right, welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Good morning, Angie.
Hello, good evening, Chris.
Yes, I know. It's like early afternoon, but it feels like morning, you know, especially when you have a three-year-old.
It's late here, and it feels like it's been a long day when you have a four-year-old and a one-and-a-half-year-old, that's for sure.
One-and-a-half-year-old, yeah, no kidding,
but
no kidding.
They're in bed dreaming about animals, animal conservation, so I don't have to worry about them for now. We get to have fun tonight, or this morning for you, because we're going to be talking about our first species of turtle.
Yeah, the alligator snapping turtle. Like, I just, every time I hear that, I just... Whack.
It was like go big or go home. We picked kind of one of the largest and maybe not well known, or perhaps after this episode it'll be more well known, but very iconic species of turtles.
Yeah, I mean, just ancient looking, right? That's everything I've read about them, is just this ancient, you know, dinosaur looking like turtle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I have a picture that I'm looking at right now, and it's almost unbelievable.
How
ancient it looks, but really, really cool. You'll definitely have to stay tuned to hear a good description and to learn more about the alligator snapping turtle.
You know, and I just want to say, before we get rolling, I just this morning it kind of hit me because I was taking out the rubbish to the curb, and
you're such a New Zealander now.
Yeah, I'm cheeky. So my three-year-old Brick comes home and starts just sits in his lexicon now. He just starts, he's talking like a Kiwi already. But I was taking out the garbage or the rubbish, and I was thinking about when I was putting down my recycling. You know, I know sometimes we're always talking about, you know, and you and I always try to keep this upbeat, but I was very proud of humanity because I was actually putting out recycling. And I remember as a kid, we didn't recycle. No one cared.
No. I'm gonna tell you a little horrible family secret. We burned our trash.
Yeah. Thanks.
I mean, that's how far out in the country I live. There was no service.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So.
Bravo
and that's
to
extra
everybody.
Nasty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for people that recycle, you know, thank you, because it made me. It dawned on me when I was putting it out, thinking about us recording today, and I was like, you know, we have come. And we're making progress. We definitely are.
Well, and it's so funny you mentioned this, Chris, because I'm not even making this up. True story. Yeah. Just tonight, 2 hours ago, we're finishing dinner. And I think that not only are we making progress, like you said, like our generation, but I think the next generation is going to make even more progress. Because my four-year-old Xander, we're getting done with dinner, and I gave them... If you're not a parent, I apologize. But if you're a parent, you have to know these about these squeezable applesauce packets.
Yes, yes.
With a twist-off lid. They're wonderful. They're convenient. They're horrible for the environment. I had a big party this weekend to celebrate my graduation, so I had them for the kids. We had some left over. We had them for dinner. Yeah. I threw it in the trash because they're a weird type of...
like foil almost, right?
Yeah, whatever they're made of. They're not the normal 1, 2, 3, 4 that our recycling bins will accept here in the city that I live in. So I threw it in the trash, and I did look at the bottom to make sure that I couldn't recycle it. Mm-hmm. But I got busted by the Xander police. He says, Mom. And I said, what? He said, can you recycle that applesauce? And it was kind of like cool and annoying at the same moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that I was like getting like, I was totally called out by my four-year-old.
Yes.
And so then I'd explained to him that it's not, it can't go in our normal recycle bin, but it's this special thing called like some kind of special where I think you can actually mail it in they'll recycle it.
Okay.
But a pain in the keister, right?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, Chris, because of him, I was like, you know what, Xander? I will look into it. We'll save them. And yeah. Now I'm going to have to totally recycle these really hard things to recycle.
Yeah. Good, Xander. Good, Xander, our paleontologist. But it's, no, it is. It's developing healthy habits, right, for the environment. And our children are learning. I think even my two, they know to recycle. Like, where does this go, Dad? You know, oh, it goes in recycling. Or, you know, my three-year-old, can we recycle this? So we didn't have that growing up. So develop those habits with your kids. That's going to pay off dividends long time.
And then you're forced to put your money where your mouth is.
I know. But it's like this weekend, you know, we're at the mall eating lunch and it's like, everything's in plastic and plastic straws.
Oh, it's so horrible. It's once you start looking at everything, you like, ugh. Yeah. But then you can do your little part and not ask for a straw or not ask for a lid. I did that this weekend as well. Yeah. So every little bit.
I think, like you said, just being aware of it, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not shaming anybody or anything like that. And,
oh, no. If you're a mom on the road, just throw that pack in the trash.
Yeah. don't worry about it.
You can only do so much.
Yeah. So at the end today, we are going to talk about this controversy with snapping turtles and their bite force. And I remember it was 10 years ago. I think it was Discovery Channel or Animal Planet. They were doing measurements on bite force. And they came up with the conclusion that snapping turtles had the highest bite force of any animal. They did sharks, great white sharks,
other things.
And so we're going to talk about that because it's controversial that some people say, no, they actually don't have the strongest bite force. So stay tuned and we will do that. But I'm really excited about this one, Angie. I say this every week. It's like on replay. I'm excited about every animal, but this one was cool to research. And one of the first questions I had was, okay, what is the difference between a turtle and tortoise? Almost like we did, what's the difference between a frog and a toad, right?
Sure.
So you tell me, what's the difference?
Well, So this is the answer that Xander would give you if you asked him, if he wasn't sleeping. The quick answer is that a turtle is going to live in water, mm-hmm. where a tortoise, on the other hand, almost exclusively is land-dwelling animals. Mm-hmm. And they have stubby feet, and they're not really good swimmers. Hmm. But it should be noted that both turtles and tortoises are very similar. They're ectotherms, which means mm-hmm. that their body temperature is based on the temperature of the air around them.
Word of the day.
Air or water is ectotherm. Yeah. They lay eggs and they breathe air. They have scales and shells. So they're very similar. The only big differences are turtles are in water and then tortoises are on land for the most part. Mm-hmm. And it should be noted it's not 100% distinct, but tortoises, the land-dwelling guys, they are typically herbivores too, that only mm-hmm. eat low-lying shrubs and cacti and grasses is another form of vegetation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whereas a turtle is going to be more of an omnivore and perhaps eat lots of different types of food like fish or insects, maybe a little bit of grass here and there. So mm-hmm. that's probably the biggest difference.
That's what I always kind of thought. You know, the difference between turtles and tortoises, and that's kind of what I thought with frogs and toads. But what the heck's a terrapin? I always hear like the University of Maryland terrapins. So what's a terrapin?
I know. It is. It's a little confusing. I always just thought of the Grateful Dead album Terrapin Station.
So. Oh, wow.
you can tell the crowd that I ran with in high school, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But terrapin basically is a term that's just used for turtles that are semi-aquatic. So they live near brackish waters or swampy waters. It's mostly like a mix between a turtle and a tortoise, but it's basically a turtle. It's gonna go in the turtle category if it has to, but they are probably gonna spend a little more time on land than your typical turtle.
Right. And I remember, you know, talking to Corbin last week and the one story, you know, we're gonna get into alligator snapping turtles where I actually saw one. You know, in the middle of a walkway, and it wasn't a huge, like 200-pounder, but you know, it was pretty sizable. And I even asked my 7-year-old, I was like, "Oh, you remember?" Because I told him driving to school this morning, and I was like, "Oh, you know, we're gonna record about alligator snapping turtles." And he's like, "Dad, remember when we saw that one?" You know,
cool.
He was like three. He remembered. Yeah,
they have good memories. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. So then back to what you know, I was saying to Corbin last week, you know, I remember just Florida, all the wildlife we have down there, you know, the gators are everywhere. you know, snappy turtles, the red belly sliders, right? Those big ones in Florida. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they're so cute.
Yeah, they're everywhere on logs. You go kayaking in Florida or anything. Florida's got awesome wildlife.
Yeah, well, and I think in general, the turtle or the tortoise, but primarily probably the turtle, really hits home with everybody, every little kid. We were all young once and either found a turtle, helped it across the road, or a friend maybe had a pet turtle, or at our school maybe had a turtle in a tank. So I think our general attraction to them goes back to when we're really young. And for me, since it is the first time we're covering a turtle species, thank goodness the story has nothing to do with an alligator snapping turtle snapping turtle in general. But for me, my first turtle experience out in the country, this will be good. Wait for it.
Okay.
You haven't heard this one. So I was probably Xander's age, 3 or 4, definitely old enough to remember. And of course, we found a turtle, my sister and myself and our dear friends and neighbors. So my older sister, Molly, and her best friend, Casey, who hopefully you're out there listening because Casey was one of my original fans. She loved the podcast.
Yeah.
So those two silly older girls told me the safest place for the turtle was across the street. I don't know if that was like from the joke or what, but across the street. And as I'm going, so they had me cross the street. I mean, hopefully they had me look both ways. I don't even know.
It's a
country, so not many. Yeah. A car drives by like every once an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I'm across the street, and they're on the other side, way up near the house. And they're like, Angie, the turtle's so sad that you're saying goodbye to it. You should give it a kiss goodbye.
Oh, no.
Well, Chris, so the innocent 4-year-old or whatever I was at the time, I plant my lips right on that turtle. And of course, my parents weren't watching or whatever. On the turtle. And lo and behold, guess what the turtle did, Chris?
I could tell with your nose. Yeah, I could see.
Yeah. So it bit me, and it bit me hard, and it clamped onto my bottom lip.
Ow.
And so then I was yelling, help me, as this, like, you know, 2-pound, 3-pound turtle was, like, flapping in the wind. And luckily, and the girls now, I think, were freaking out across the street or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And luckily, I was smart enough to not rip it off my mouth. I think I either waited it out or finally it let go. It realized I wasn't going to hurt it. And to this day, Chris, I still have a scar on my lip.
I've never seen it. I was just teasing. But yeah, I think your sister owes you a lot for that still. You know,
I do.
That trauma. Yeah.
I know. I mean, luckily, I had a deep-rooted love for all animals, including reptiles. Like, that didn't turn me off. You would think that would turn a kid like myself off. But it didn't, because I just love animals so much. It just made me learn about how to be smarter and make smarter choices and how to handle animals better.
Yeah. It's like me and the peen toad, you know, my mother-in-law doesn't let me live that one down.
That's so funny.
don't pick up toads, people. They will pee on you. So this alligator snapping turtle, this thing is prehistoric. It just looks like a dinosaur. It's just gnarly looking, I guess is a good word for it. Just to kind of give you a visual, you know, I think most people, again, know what a turtle looks like, but this one just, you know, has some differences that make it look just crazy.
It looks like a plated dinosaur.
It does.
For any dinosaur geek out there, it's been related to an Ankylosaurus, basically because of the spikes, which that's not the right word, but the peaks or whatever they are, they have like 3 or 4 of them right along the back.
Yeah. So the pointed spikes, it goes laterally down their back.
Yeah, a couple rows of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got great pictures that I'll put on the show notes. So they do have this shell that's just, it just looks, you know, like most turtles have smooth shells.
Of course.
This alligator snapping turtle doesn't. It's spiky. It's ridgy. You know, their mouths have like a sharp beak with 2 fine points, 1 upper, 1 lower. So it looks pretty ancient there. Thick, spiky skin around their, I call it fat, heavy head. You know,
very,
like, you think of turtles.
A thick neck. Thick, long, powerful neck. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You would think like turtles have these long, elegant necks. This one's not. This one's like a linebacker, you know, in the NFL. Just like, really long claws, almost like, you know, they almost look like a grizzly bear claws. Now, their colors are brown, green, darker gray is what I read. And then this is funny, kind of probably once we get to behavior, usually covered in algae.
Yes, definitely. Most pictures, they are covered in algae. So they look green, more green than they truly are.
Yeah, because that's where they live, and they're not super active. And they have a really long tail.
Mm-hmm.
And then what got me was the eyes. Like, you look at turtles, and they kind of have, like, these bulging fish eyes. But the alligator snapping turtle, I would say, like, it was like a snake. Almost like, you know, they have that crazy-looking eye.
Well, and interestingly enough, their eyes are also surrounded by a star-shaped arrangement of fleshy filament, almost eyelashes.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely.
It kind of gives it that appearance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So just crazy-looking. Now, the alligator snapping turtles live in the southeastern United States. Generally, any rivers, canals, lakes, you know, from Louisiana all the way over to Florida, where Angie is. I mean, she definitely has snapping turtles in her area. And then they did go, and we're going to talk about it, but they did go a little bit farther north of Tennessee into Illinois and Iowa and some places there. But, you know, once we get to conservation, they don't believe they're there anymore.
Yeah, they say that they historically were endemic to the U.S. in rivers that drain into the Gulf of Mexico. So I just always think of anything around or near or eventually drains into the Mississippi River Basin or over here, like the Suwannee over here by us in Florida.
By you. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, they're not where you grew up in Michigan. They weren't as far north as there, but there was the common snapping turtle.
Right, and that's the one that I'm very lucky that my sister and her friend did not make me kiss. Could you imagine? Yes, like, what?
Yeah, you would have had some surgery back then because, yeah, those suckers are up there, up in the Canada, right? So they can be up there, but not the alligator ones. And the common snapping turtle, they have a smoother shell. They're just not as crazy looking as the alligator snapping turtle. So not as, I guess, charismatic is the word.
Sure.
You like to use.
Yeah. Just distinct looking charismatic. And I think that leads right next into the most important things about the alligator snapping turtle is its size.
Yeah. They're huge, right?
Crazy big. That's what was striking to me doing the research. I hadn't, because I have not encountered one here in Florida. And it just hasn't been on my radar. And so doing the research and looking at photo, I mean, looking at a photo doesn't do it justice unless it's next to something else to show you just how big it is. Or like in the video of Corbin picking one up. That's where, you know, when it's compared to like a person's body, that's where you can kind of start to see and begin to understand how big they are.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they weigh as much as I do. They can. And, you know, up to 230 pounds, 100 kilograms, there are reports of some living, you know, not living, some weighing up to 300 pounds. And I think those are more under human care, so they just have the optimal diet and just get old and heavy. But yeah, they're huge.
Yeah, there's many different sizes reported for these guys. One of the largest ones was out of Kansas in 1937, of an alligator snapping turtle weighing about 403 pounds or 183 kilograms. But that's never been able to be verified. So that's, I guess, maybe not a great talking point. But what has been verified, like you said, at the zoo, there was one in Brookfield Zoo in Chicago that was 236 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Another one in a different zoo that was almost 300. But researchers took a whole bunch of studies, and from different studies, the three different averages were 50 pounds, 30 pounds, and 99 pounds. So yeah, they can get pretty darn big, that's for sure.
Right. And I think, you know, optimal diet, they're getting fed, you know, daily or whatever it is, they, you know, pretty often. Now, the alligator snapping turtle, there are actually three species, or they believe there may now be three species. The typical common scientific name is Marcochelys temminckii. That is their species name. Now, a recent evidence, again, as we do DNA studies and some of these other things, that they're pushing that there might be three distinct species, and they're separated by like millions of years of evolution. It's not a recent split.
Yeah, no, this is really interesting data coming out of 2014 from the Center of Biological Diversity.
Yeah, and so they're, it has a huge impact, right?
Yeah, it really does, because they are already, their population's already declining, of course, because of habitat loss and human encroachment and even being hunted. But when you take what was thought to be one species now to potentially be three species, then their numbers are, of course, going to be much more smaller.
Lower
than previously thought or endangered. And
the
other species, do you want to go ahead and say the other two?
You want to say them?
No.
Come on, Edge. Yes, you do. You want to say it. Okay. Here we go.
I'll tell you what, just for kicks and giggles, I will do the one by me because I'm here in Central Florida. One of the new species is the Swanee snapping turtle, otherwise known as M. Swanensis. No. This is why I have you do it.
Right. Swanensis.
Swanensis of the Swanee there River, just right down the road from me. So that one has been declared a separate species. And then there's another one that's been proposed, but is not generally recognized as another species, which is the
Apalachee River. So that's Apalachicolae. Or Apalachicolae. Yeah, Apalachicolae.
You could do this for a living, Chris, like enunciation.
I've been working on it. Yeah, Marcocellus Apalachicolae. So that's the three different species that they're proposing. Yeah, I'm going to go get on that species name list. Like, no thanks. No thanks.
I bet it pays a lot.
I know. So evolution, here we go. Turtle evolution. Now, there's not a lot on alligator snapping turtles as far as where they've evolved. Again, you know, I know somebody out there is studying this stuff. It's just there's not a lot of papers out there, a lot of scientific research. So just to kind of sum up, turtle evolution, this spans over 220 million years.
Yeah, like, these guys are walking dinosaurs. I mean, they are.
Yeah, the reptilians. I think, you know, when you look at snakes and now you look at these turtles, they are really old. And they can date the first fossil. Now, there's some debate even earlier than 220 million years that there was turtle-like animals, but their plates, it wasn't a complete shell.
Okay.
So they had separate plates. Mm-hmm. The first time there was interlocking plates, like a complete shell, was about 220 million years ago. And, you know, there are theories on how they evolved. You know, some with the archaeosaurs, which are also crocodile-like animals that they evolved with. Some people propose that they've evolved completely from themselves. So, you know, a lot of debate in the scientific community, the people that study this stuff. But I think the important message is these are ancient animals. And the alligator snapping turtle evolved specifically in North America.
Yes, and I think it should be also noted that it is definitely a different genus than the common snapping turtle.
Yes. Yeah, they're kind of their own little offshoot on the turtle tree.
Right. Which, so, that's why it'd be such a bummer if they did go extinct, because they're kind of
They're so unique.
Yeah, they're so unique. They're like they're the only one from this branch to still be around.
Right, and they've carved out their own ecological niche, which we'll get to in nutrition and stuff. So, AJ, I found the largest turtle ever.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you where. Where do you think? No, let me give you a story. So when they did Titanoboa, they actually had some skeletons. That's actually where the researcher, I talked about it last week with Corbin, but the scientist from UF, he was down in these coal mine pits in Colombia looking for large crocodilian and turtle bones and shells. So they did have some that they recovered at the museum there on campus. But, so that should give you a clue. Where do you think the largest turtle ever evolved?
South America.
No, New Zealand. No, it's good. Oh. Yeah, South America. South America. Okay. You're right. South America.
Yay.
So Stupidemes. And this lived about 5 million years ago. They actually, here you go, because I know you said in a recent pod that it was the blue whales, that you want to go see the blue whale at the American Natural History Museum in New York.
Yes.
So go.
That's on the bucket list this summer.
You do. When you drive, go through and see it because they actually have this guy. So you have to take a picture. Yeah, they have this guy hanging from the ceiling.
And what's it called again?
Stupend. I know. It sounds like stupid, but it's Stupend Emmys. Cool. So, yeah. So, okay. Yeah, it's up there. That fourth, I think it's the fourth floor there. Is where they have the Xander would go crazy. All the dinosaurs, and now they have a new one. Like his neck goes through doorways and stuff. It's crazy. So definitely go. So this guy, total length was like 11 feet. Their shell was almost 8 feet. Yeah. So I couldn't find any weights on them, but I imagine a ton or two. Like huge turtle.
Awesome.
Wouldn't want it falling on you. So
no.
So these guys lived over 5 million years ago, Angie. So, you know, I definitely think there's a link with the alligator snapping turtles. So I have a question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not. I'm going to test your knowledge.
Uh-oh.
How long can these things live? Like, ooh, do they live forever or what?
I always think of the Galapagos tortoise,
right?
Because I know they can live over 100 years or even more than that, maybe 200.
Isn't there one still alive from Darwin, or did it just pass away? There was one like almost 200.
We gotta look it up.
Remember.
I'm dying now. But I would say probably a while, but I don't know the answer. 100
right,
years,
right? Yeah, roughly 100 years. That's what they think. 100 years. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're Dr. Angie now. Yeah, so they live up to 100. Like, that's a long time.
Yeah, so, that's a really long time.
Yeah, there's some ancient ones crawling around the swamps of Florida. They are really big. So not only do they live...
Boy, if they could only talk, think about that. They were here before Disney came in, right? They were probably living in the swamps. They were here before the Burmese python.
I know. I still go back to the bowhead whale. It still had a harpoon from the 1800s in it. Like, just some of these animals are just so ancient. The stories they could tell. Yeah. So these, you know, we talked about sizes. You know, not only are they heavy, their shells can be as long as 65 centimeters or 26 inches, so almost 2 feet across. Now, the females are much smaller, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So 23 kilograms or 50 pounds, and their shells are only like a foot long, or a little bit over a foot long, 15 inches. And pretty much just spend their entire life in water, and they just, I would say they're kind of sedentary. They just don't do a lot, right? They just kind of...
Right, no.
Their behavior,
Exactly. They are in the water most of their lives. It's pretty much only the females to come out to lay their eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they're going to be in the water and most likely just laying at the bottom. And contrary to their name, alligator snapping turtle.
Yeah.
They're not really an aggressive type turtle. They're not even hunting their food like a typical perhaps mm-hmm. turtle might do. They pretty much just lay down at the bottom of these murky waters and lay and wait for their food to pretty much come into their mouth.
Right.
Well, and of course, Chris, because of their name, alligator snapping turtle, they sound tough or maybe scary. And of course, they are scary-ish looking, if you will. I think they're kind of cute with the green algae on their back. But the reason they have this green algae on their back is because they pretty much just lay around the bottom and wait for the food to come into their mouth. They're not out there hunting or chasing after fish or something as another aquatic species might be
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're laying down at the bottom and they're actually opportunistic feeders.
Right.
So they rely on the food that they've caught live themselves, but they'll also consume dead organisms, which they can scavenge. Mm. And the really cool recent discovery that was made is that this alligator snapping turtle's mouth is camouflaged, right? If you look at the picture in our show notes, you can see
how
they almost look like a rock or a stone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they possess, it's called a vermiform or a worm-shaped appendage at the tip of their tongue. And we'll have to put a picture on the show notes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really looks like they have their normal tongue, like what you'd think, I guess, a turtle tongue looks like.
Yeah.
But then from it, they have this long thing that sticks out and wiggles like a worm. It's like a lure.
We could back up the bus a little bit. You French kissed a turtle. You told us that story.
I know. Yeah, oh my gosh, my first kiss. And it did not go well. So let's just say I waited till after high school for the next kiss after that. You know what I mean? Wink, wink, wink. Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not till after high school, but you know, a while. Like a good little Michigan girl would do. But yeah, no, Chris, so it's crazy. Yeah. They use this vermiform, worm-shaped appendage at the tip of their tongue. And this is called a form of peckhamian mimicry.
Mimicry.
Yeah, peckhamian mimicry or aggressive mimicry.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah.
And it basically is just, it's called like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Hmm.
They basically use exploitation of some of their body parts, maybe a scent or something, to lure a benefit towards itself,
right.
Whether it's a mate
food,
or in this case, it's food, because that a fish goes for this little worm and all they have to do is clamp down on that large jaw, which we'll talk about the force in which they can do that, and they have a meal. So
I know, it makes me hear you talk about that, like my toes hurt. I don't know why. Like I just think of all the times I was swimming in Florida and I was like, those things on the bottom, and they're really camouflaged really well.
Oh, yeah.
And if, like, your toe got in their mouth, like, it's game over for that toe. Like, just, ow.
Yeah, no, but the good news is they probably don't, no offense to your hairy toes, they don't probably want to eat your toe more than you want them to eat your toe. So,
I mean,
typically toes are not what they're going for. They're going for fish carcasses, mollusks, carrion, amphibians. But they have been known to eat snakes, crayfish, worms, water birds, aquatic plants, and other turtles. So red-bellied sliders, watch out.
Yeah, for the alligator snapping turtles, because they're carnivorous. You know,
they like
their meat.
And I don't know how much is documented in the literature, because once again, diving the literature, besides this newest update about them potentially being three separate species and how this means we really need to ramp up their conservation if they really are three species to help protect them. But other than that, there's not a ton about them, and it's probably because they do lie around at the bottom of murky waters, so they're just, you can't really, it's not like a bird or a mammal where you can go with your binoculars and sit and study these guys. But there's alleged reports that they'll eat aquatic rodents, including nutrias, muskrats, sometimes even squirrels, possum, raccoons, and armadillos, if they're by the water's edge. So, I mean, they're obviously they're definitely an opportunistic feeder, which is probably one of the reasons why they're so darn successful, even with all the, you know, all the different problems that are happening now with the watershed in Florida and with human encroachment.
I mean, the Everglades and
it's scary. Yeah.
The chemicals getting dumped in there. And I have to look back in Florida. They had that one river that was just like green slime, right? It was just all that. Oh, I forgot. It was a couple years ago down there. I don't know if that ever got resolved.
Yeah,
but,
I'm not familiar with that one. It's probably because I was so busy studying for one of your exams. I didn't have time to know what was going on in real life.
You were in the lab. You were pregnant, one. And then you were in the lab, too, working hard.
I know. We'll have to put the funny picture of me up with where I was heavily pregnant and my lab coat's busting open.
That's the funniest. It is. Give you a lot of kudos for that one, Ange. So while they're hunting, they stay underwater pretty long, right?
Sure, yeah. They say around 50 minutes, but up to an hour, up to 60 minutes, which is a long time.
Longer than a blue whale, right?
Yeah.
We just did blue whales a couple weeks ago. And an hour underwater, I couldn't find any of the physiology on it, but I imagine it's something similar.
Me neither. It was kind of a bum dinger,
There's not a lot of info out there on some of these things, but we'll keep digging.
Well, maybe you and I will, maybe you and I will inspire a budding grad student to an undergrad student or a high school student or somebody to want to answer some of these questions so we can learn more about them to help.
And I imagine it's something probably like the hemoglobin and kind of like the whales where they just have a lot more and they can store oxygen. But now, going into behavior, I mean, I know there's not a lot because they don't do much, but I did read they're pretty docile. So their reputation of being this horrible, monster, it's not true.
It's totally not true, Chris. And I think you bring up a really good point because it's always hard when animals have these stereotypes, right? Nobody wants a stereotype, especially, for goodness sakes, if it's not true. Right. And yeah, I think because they're basically opportunistic feeders, they're not going after anyone. You shouldn't not want them in your watershed. They definitely play a critical role, especially if they're eating carrion. Right. I mean, who would want stinky carrion in their watershed? Right. So, and they're docile, just laying there. But I do think it's interesting because some people choose to keep alligator snapping turtles as pets.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be captive bred. Now, Chris, there is a group of reptile experts or enthusiasts out there, people that love turtles, that do keep alligator snapping turtles as pets.
Mm-hmm.
However, due to their potential size, right, we talked about being up in the 100-pound range.
Yeah, huge.
They have really specific needs. And for most people, they're not going to make a good pet.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that's, unless you're like the most experienced aquatic turtle keeper, because they're not only like tortoises that just need land, they need the water element and their size. So in general, it's probably not recommended, at least in my opinion, because of these specific needs and diet and size. And in fact, in the U.S., certain states are actually banning them as pets, such as California. Probably because of the welfare issues, and it does really take an experienced handler to even move these guys. If you see one in the wild, if you do live in the South like myself, you want to be very careful, not from they're aggressive and going to attack you, but you wouldn't want to move one without really knowing what you're doing. There's a proper way to handle them. You can, if you ever came across one, you could Google it or.
I walked around it. I did not.
Yeah, that's the smartest thing to do.
I let, you know, like, I think the hard part is, like, when a turtle's crossing the road, you know, I've helped turtles, you know, you don't want to take them back to where they were coming from because they're moving with a purpose. You just take them to the other side, the direction they're going.
Sure.
I would, alligator snapping turtle, I don't think I would even mess with it.
In preparing for this episode, I watched a lot of videos, and you can see expert handlers. They'll grab them like behind their neck on the top of their shell or carapace, and then the very back by their tail. And they say that that's, but I mean, then you have to be able to lift 100 pounds, which I mean, I think I can lift my dog. She's 76.4 pounds. We just weighed her the other day. I can do her, but it's not pretty. And so, yeah, it's just, they're very big, but.
Yeah. Like your instinct would be to grab them by the side, but especially like an alligator snapping turtle, it could turn its neck and nip you.
Sure.
Because right? It's going to defend itself. It's going to defend itself.
Yeah. And I just, I would not recommend keeping this as a pet. And once again, if you ever do find yourself with an exotic animal or an exotic reptile and you're not able to care for it, make sure you check out some of the pet amnesty websites that can help you, can help you find a home for that, because please don't make the mistake of just setting your turtle go out in the wild.
Yeah, never.
It will die. That is not in the best interest of the animal, especially if they've been...
Well, and that's how we have all these invasive species, too.
Exactly.
Like, you know, the lionfish off the coast of Florida.
Yeah, so there's definitely plenty of websites out there. And there's tons of great groups, too, for specific species that'll help you relocate it to find it a new home. But honestly, I always say, before you do any pet, even a puppy or a cat, your research, because not every pet is for every family or every person.
Right.
And reptiles, interestingly enough, are a lot more expensive than people would think as far as their care.
Are.
They're really high maintenance. Yeah. They're sensitive. And so you got to know, you got to know what you're doing. And anyways.
Yeah. You need the proper equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do make, I mean, there's, you know, even Corbin said last week, like there's a lot of good starter pets. If you're really into it, you know, I was just thinking, shout out to Derek. I don't know if he listens to the pod or not, but he just graduated from the zoo school there and he's a snake expert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to see him all the time, you know, and I see him on Facebook all the time posting stuff about snakes, and that's where his love, you know, Corbin started out with reptiles as a young kid.
Yeah.
So some of them, but just making a decision, hey, I want a reptile is probably not smart because, you know, they are a little bit tougher to keep. You need to know what you're doing. I'm curious because, you know, I know there's not a ton of info out there, but reproductive strategies, I'm going to nerd out with you here because I've got some stuff I want to talk about. But did you run across anything with like generation intervals? How many in a clutch of eggs? How many do they have? Do you know any of that stuff?
Sure. There's definitely some general information out there about alligator snapping turtle reproductive biology. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to note that their generation interval is anywhere from 11 to 13 years or longer, because sexual maturity is reached around 12 years of age.
So if you think about it, like, I know they live a long mm-hmm. time, but I mean, you know, and just from what little I know of turtles and tortoise, that, you know, they have high, and I know this because I looked it up the other day, they have high mortality as young ones.
Sure. Yeah. Right? I mean, how many of them are actually making it to 12 years of age?
Right. And so then, I just want people to think that, like, oh, they have 100 eggs. Wow, they could reproduce really quickly, which isn't necessarily true.
The information about female alligator snapping turtles is that they will lay a nest of only 10 to 50 eggs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mating takes place yearly and typically in the spring for most of their range. Mm-hmm. And their gestation is about 2 months. And they will lay only about 10 to 50 eggs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and then how many of those eggs survive depend mm-hmm. on how much predation happens at the nest right. site. Right. And then how many survive to reproduce again when they're 12 years old or so. Right. It depends. Low, and yeah. they also believe that with alligator snapping turtles, although they might breed every year, they sometimes only produce a clutch every other year of eggs.
Okay. Okay.
So it's not necessarily even every year. So that also brings their generation interval up higher too.
Right. It's not like, you know, because I think sometimes when you think of amphibians or reptiles that, you know, like we're seeing with the Burmese python in the sure. Everglades. Like they're doing great. They're doing awesome.
Right. Well, and Chris, that's because the Burmese python doesn't really have any predators where
exactly
the alligator snapping turtle doesn't once it's a huge 100-pound adult. But when mm-hmm. it's a little guy for a long time, it's a tasty yeah. meal for other large fish, raccoons, birds will go right. after its eggs. So right. it definitely does have some predators when it's either when it's an egg or when it's really little.
Right, right.
But what I dorked out on for a very long time, yeah. which yeah. is probably fine now that a lot of my graduation duties are coming to an end for the most right. part. But what I found super fascinating, and I'd heard of this before, but this podcast mm-hmm. gave me a reason to dork out about it, is the fact that quite often in many turtle species, and most likely in the alligator snapping turtle, mm. is the temperature at which the eggs are incubated in the sand or the dirt determines the sex of the offspring.
I was going to tell you, and I ran down that rabbit hole too.
You did. No way. Well, yes. Dude, is...
I was like reading papers left and right. Oh, like I wanted to answer this question.
I know. It was gnarly. I mean, it's the reproductive biologist's, because I'm like, what gene controls this? Is it the SRY gene or is it the... Yeah.
I know. And I'm like, why the hell would they even do this? Where did this even start?
Wow, what's the
like,
point?
Why temperature
what's the
dependent?
Point?
Yeah, no way. Okay,
find? And that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, wait a second. There's a whole group of people out there that are way smarter than me, like actually studying yeah. like just this part of reproductive evolutionary Gee. Biology.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And so yeah. it was... It was a rabbit hole, but it was, I don't know if there's a way to describe a fun rabbit hole, but no, yeah. it's,
that's funny.
It is. So it's called temperature dependent sex determination.
Right.
And
right.
it's a form of environmental sex determination. I guess there's others out there, which I want to know more about. I didn't have time. Hopefully we'll do another species that.
Yeah. You know, this one, genetic sex selection. I mean, that's what, you know, we. Reproductive biology, the sperm cell, you know, for most mammals, it's X or Y gene or animals. I meant to say most animals. So, you know, if it's XX, it's female. If it's XY, it's male, and it's the sperm cell.
Right.
So I always say in class, you know, I always say Henry VIII, sorry, it wasn't you. It wasn't her. It was you.
Right.
You know, he kept wanting sons. He kept cutting off their heads. But it's like, dude, It's your spirit.
Right.
You were throwing lots of X's, not Y's.
Right. It is. Yes.
Now, I have some theories, and this is way beyond this podcast, but, you know, maybe in the future what we talk about. Because I think the female actually does have, I know in some species it's true, they can actually select the X or Y. But this one, yeah. So the temperature determination. So what did you find? How can you summarize?
Well, so what I can summarize is that, yeah, there's basically the two types. There's the genetic sex determination, which is what mm-hmm. humans do with the chromosomes. Mm-hmm. And then there's this environmental sex determination, or what a lot of species of turtles and alligators mm-hmm. do.
Depend on.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Which is temperature dependent. And so they have looked at this because it is such a cool phenomenon in alligator snapping turtles. So I did find a study from 1994 that their results looking at alligator snapping turtle temperature dependent sex determination showed that some embryos are temperature independent mm-hmm. because they become females no matter what, even if the temperature changes higher or lower.
Right. So to kind of summarize what I found was the lower temperature results in males, higher temperature in females, and then that thermoneutral is a mix, right?
Yes. And that's how I think it generally is for most species of turtles. But mm-hmm. the alligator snapping turtle, they think, might be able to defy that in some ways and not necessarily when the temperature is higher, have females.
Right.
So, and interestingly enough, Chris, just reading about all this, what I found is, like, I always thought it was the higher temperatures had females and lower temperatures had males, but it's actually species to species. It does vary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As far as that. The alligator snapping turtle tends to follow that trend. And a lot of them for the higher tend to be female, but lower can sometimes also be female. And I think that the evolutionary biologists, reproductive biologists, basically, one of the hypotheses is that the reason you want more female, if the environment is uncomfortable for whatever reason, mm-hmm, too hot, too mm-hmm. cold, the more females you have, the more chance, you only need one male, right?
Right. Well, yeah, this is what's kind of frustrating, but lovely about what we do. Because I've ran down this hole for literally like 3 hours. Papers, like,
I know, it's so
cool. Looking this up because I want to know why.
I know.
Why? And I there wasn't a silver bullet, I guess, out there. There wasn't one answer on why.
And
this
I think
is.
You're.
There's a lot of biology.
Well, I was going to say, you're kind of more like the why, evolutionary, big mm-hmm. picture guy. Mm-hmm. I tend to be more of like, physiologically, like finite. What gene is switching on, what is switching off, how does your body even know that? I mean, how does an egg that's barely developed know that it's hotter than it should be versus, I mean, I don't know, that it literally blows my mind. But Chris, I think for me, I don't know which rabbit hole you went down, but for me, what this is really important about, regardless of why big picture or why from a physiological point of view, is what does this mean with global climate change?
I know. That's the big thing.
That is what's for lack of better words, is scary.
Right.
For these species such as turtles and certain alligator species that do have temperature-dependent sex determination. Because
really
check this out. In 2018, researchers right near you, off the coast of Australia, Rain Island is one of the most important green sea turtle rookeries in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And they have, it's where a rookery is where female sea turtles from all around the Pacific lay their eggs, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a study in 2018 found that for the past 20 years, there's been a lot more females than male hatchlings.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe recent studies, so probably from 2016-17-ish, that females outnumber males 116 to 1.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
And this is green sea turtles, the big, beautiful ocean turtles. We'll definitely cover them now that I found out about this information.
Yeah.
In the near future. And the research, one of the turtle scientists, is basically said that this is, like, they knew there's probably going to be a little difference. Like, that was their hypothesis. But this was, like, blow them out of the water extreme with an exclamation point.
Right.
That,
it was that out of whack.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And this, now once again, this is only just the population that they looked at on Rain Island near you. Right. So they don't know other parts of the world, what other species of turtles, how this could be affected.
Right,
and obviously nobody's looked at it in alligator snapping turtles.
No, and everything about climate change is the poles are more affected.
Sure.
So that's where, like, the extremes of the planet, it's warming quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, New Zealand, Australia, or like say Canada, Europe, Northern Asia. So those areas are seeing more of a problem. So, like, just to hit my mind, like Siberia and the permafrost that's melting, dumping tons of carbon in the atmosphere. So it's just, I can only imagine for the turtles. So answering the big question of why did temperature sensitive? And that's what I've really looked for. You're right. The big picture part. And the only things I could find, and there's some different theories out there, is that the females tend to lay their eggs where their offspring have the best chance of survival. And so if they tend to dig a shallower nest, it'll produce more females, or a deeper nest will produce more males. Now, nests closer to the water, eggs are prone to predation.
Sure.
Of the eggs, right? The eggs. So predators will dig up and eat the eggs. If they go deeper and go in further and say, like, you know, from the stream bed or whatever, newborn turtles are more prone to get eaten.
Sure, because they have to travel the water, right?
Yeah, you're screwed either way, right? So to give everybody, you know, I spent hours looking at this. I didn't find any clear determination. There was one on snapping turtles that they had all male or all female clutches. They actually had, if they were all female or all male, they actually had higher survival rates.
Oh, interesting.
For some reason. Yeah, for some reason, when they're born, they move less. They're more sedentary. Mm. They don't move around as much, whereas mixed clutches tended to kind of like scatter, which is weird. But so visual predators like herons, like birds, or bullfrogs, things that eat these babies, you know, things that scurry around, they're going to be attracted to eat. So these all male or all female clutches actually had higher survival rates. So there may be some sort of natural selection on incubation temperature or anti-predator behavior. You know, there's other theories out there that smaller females can't dig as deep as, you know, bigger females, or it could just be totally random.
I know.
Environment. I know.
I need to go back and get another PhD.
I know. No, don't do that. No, Angie, it's interesting you talk about the climate stuff too. And with three species, like we said, they're really under threat, and a 95% reduction in population. You know, things like I read from the Fish and Wildlife that one oil spill could wipe out any one of those populations.
Oh, yeah. The International Union of Conservation of Nature declares the general group of alligator snapping turtles as vulnerable. But like you said, if we break it into at least the two distinct species and or possible
maybe
three.
Yeah.
I mean, researchers know that the alligator snapping turtle is endangered in several states, including Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri. They are protected by state law. So the state governments have taken notice of that. But still, like you said, an oil spill, but man, they've got a lot of other threats too going on.
Yeah.
I mean, climate change is huge.
Meat.
Habitat alteration, exploitation by trappers for this international, of course, market for their meat. Then as you touched on, watershed runoff, pollution, pesticide accumulation. They think they've...
Right, there's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, they think they've declined from like 95% from their historical range.
Yeah, so they're under a lot of threats. So yeah, just before we jump into the organizations, you know, I was thinking conservation tips. The first thing that came to mind was reject turtle soup. Like, I don't know, unless you know where the turtle's coming from. I don't even know if there's a turtle farm.
Not a good idea.
It could be alligator snapping turtle. Don't eat them. But I really, you know, and I doubt many of our listeners would ever even eat that. But back to climate change and habitat destruction. So I was really, when I was, you know, after I came back from that rabbit hole and was not satisfied with the answers, but at least my curiosity was somewhat sated. You know, how do we reduce our carbon footprint? And I think that's one thing that we can start, you know,
I know. Little steps, and see, look, I've been a bad student. I have not done the survey yet.
Oh, well, Jonathan did.
I know, because he's amazing.
Yeah. Shout out to
I know. No, I'm going. It's on my list to do's. I was a little busy this week. So.
Jonathan in British Columbia, who's under the average, by the way. So thank you on Facebook. But yeah, so I was thinking like, okay, so maybe we give little tips and we just keep building. Like we started the pod talking about recycling with our children. So one thing I found was work on how you drive. You know, I used to be a lead foot, especially my younger
years.
You?
Really? No.
Younger years. No. You know, as we get older, then we turn into Sunday drivers. But, you know, try not to speed or accelerate really quickly. Like the one thing it's nice having I'm not a snob, but having a hybrid is I can kind of see where that energy efficient zone is.
And
I try to stay within that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, so, but if you learn how, and now it's just kind of second nature, like I don't just stomp the pedal to the floor and take off, because that burns fuel really
Absolutely.
Quickly. And it's the estimate, and this was from the government website, U.S. government website, Fuel Economy. So I'll put the link up, fueleconomy.gov, that if, you know, estimate speeding or unnecessary acceleration decreases fuel efficiency by 33%.
Wow, that's...
And then, yeah, for every 5 miles per hour over 50, it costs you about 20 cents more per gallon of gas.
Wow, and that's... So, and even kind of from an economical point of view, gas prices here in the States are going up. So, and I think they're supposed to keep increasing. So, I mean, it's just all around better to drive less erratically.
More efficiently.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's still, you know, we talked about other things like reducing meat consumption, things like that. Still, the major carbon source is automobiles and fossil fuels. Like that is the target. That is what's dumping. Remember, for our listeners, we're losing 6 million pounds of carbon sink per minute with deforestation. So it's a race and we're losing, but you know, we all need to do our thing. So that was one thing I thought of that we could all do. So what are some organizations we should look at?
Well, Chris, I challenge any listeners out there that love, love, love alligator snapping turtles to start a conservation organization for them, because I couldn't
find
well,
one.
Well, I shouldn't. There were definitely some Facebook groups that I joined just to become learn more about them. So there's Facebook groups out there, but as far as true nonprofit conservation organizations dedicated to just alligator snapping turtles or snapping turtles at hand, I couldn't find one. So if it's out there and I missed it, oh my goodness, please let me know. I always am all about doing corrections because Chris and I sometimes make some fumbles here and there. We're not perfect.
We do.
But,
we do.
So I just went for turtle conservation in general because obviously if you listen this long to the podcast and haven't fallen asleep, you must love turtles as much as Chris and I. And they must have been part of your childhood like they were ours.
Biting your lips, yes.
Biting your lips, all that jazz. Peeing on you, whatever. So my first organization is called the Turtle Conservancy. Mm-hmm. And they can be found at www.turtleconservancy.org. And the Turtle Conservancy is dedicated to protecting threatened turtles and tortoises and their habitats worldwide. And they, with that being said, they have worldwide programs from South Africa, the Geometric Tortoise Preserve. In Mexico, they work with the Goods Thorn Scrub Tortoise and the Bullson Tortoise. They got a presence in New Jersey, for a terrapin nesting project. In Madagascar, they work with the plowshare tortoise. In Hong Kong, they work with a golden coin turtle. Cool, okay. And so a lot of these guys are either endangered or critically endangered or vulnerable. And I think what's other really interesting about this group is that they have a huge star presence. And I didn't see Leonardo on there, but maybe he's slow to join. But Christopher Walken, Pamela Anderson, Ted Danson, Matt Dillon, Slash, they all are big supporters of the turtle, turtle conservation through this group, the Turtle Conservancy. So
I've heard of them before. They're big. They're a big one. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And just basically, their strategy is fourfold. They work on conserving their natural habitat, including purchasing or land acquisition. And they also are supporters of maintaining captive breeding programs and AZA-style accredited zoos and aquariums to help restore natural populations. And they work towards monitoring and helping to prevent trade, illegal trade, that threatens many of our species. And then, of course, they do what Chris and I do. They do a lot of outreach as far as spreading global awareness. So check out www.turtleconservancy.org, or they have a really big Facebook presence. They have maybe I'll be invited. Last year they had a turtle ball in New York City to raise money.
That's awesome.
And so I'm like, man, that I could get behind that, right?
We're because of guest speakers. Yeah. They need guest speakers. Me and Angie are ready.
I've got a place to stay. You don't even have to like provide a hotel for me. We're cheap and easy, right, Chris?
Yes, it's not cheap to fly there, but I will stay with Angie in the basement.
So they're a really big group doing a lot of great things, and so check them out. My second conservation group to keep an eye on this week or to look up is fun. It's called The Turtle Room, and they can be found at theturtleroom.com, and of course they have a Facebook presence. And they also want to advance the survival of all the world's turtles and tortoises through education, conservation, and research programs. They have a beautiful website, which I had a lot of fun playing around with, where you can look up different species of turtles and tortoises by either their genus, the region where like I live or you live, or their IUCN status, whether they're endangered or they're not. And it's really helpful to kind of give you a good overview of what's going on with different populations of turtles and however you want to look them up. They also partner with a lot of really good groups like the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA, and then also the Turtle Survival Alliance, which helps monitor turtle populations. And this group specializes in the yellow margin box turtle, which is listed as endangered, the Vietnamese black-breasted leaf turtle, which is critically endangered, so go educate yourselves about that.
Right.
The ring map turtle, which is vulnerable, the Asian brown tortoise, vulnerable, and lastly, the common spider tortoise, which is critically endangered. So doing a lot of really good work for our turtle, tortoise, terrapin friends. So yeah, check out theturtleroom.com, and yeah, you're going to love their website, and you're going to there's tons of information, so stuff that you and I don't have time to cover
turtles
today.
Turtles are awesome. So, to get to the bite force, Angie.
Yes.
All right. So, if you had to guess any animal on Earth, which one, besides snapping turtle, because I'll tell you, it's not the snapping turtle. They're not the strongest, despite that show years ago. So, besides them, which one do you think has the strongest bite force?
What jumps in?
Currently living.
Okay, that's helpful, because I was going to say a dinosaur.
Yeah.
What jumps to my mind probably is like the great white shark.
No, great whites way under. They're not even average. The number one is a crocodile.
Oh, okay.
So, crocodiles are the strongest. They estimate 5,000 pounds PSI or per square inch.
Wow.
So they have the strongest bite force of any animal. And this is like science research, so it's not, you know, some TV show going out with a stick, like, oh,
right. They actually had some piece of equipment that measured this.
Yeah. Now, alligator snapping turtles are at 1,000 PSI, so they're about mid-list. There's a couple other animals on here I want to throw at you. I'll save the big one for the end. Hippos.
Okay.
Our friend Corbin's favorite animal. 1,800 PSI.
Oh, yeah.
So huge.
Well, that's
force.
Why it's so amazing that my husband would stick his hand in their mouth tickle their gums as a way to like scratch them and reinforce their good behaviors. I mean,
No thanks. Yeah. Gorilla, 1,300 PSI.
Whoa,
so
that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So even gorillas are more than an alligator snapping turtle. Now 1,000 PSI is still wow, but it's not the strongest. Now, the estimate for a T-Rex is 13,000 PSI.
Holy shnikes. So, yeah.
So Jurassic Park, you know, getting stomped, you know, or chomped by one of them, no thanks.
Wow. So what is a human?
Now, humans is, you know, I did read snapping turtles were the same as humans, but I'm finding humans like 200 PSI.
So less.
So not quite as much. Yeah, not quite as much. And then just, you know, to wrap it up is the great white shark was about 4,000 PSI.
Wow.
So they're
okay.
up there. Okay. I mean, they're, you know, you weren't wrong. You weren't wrong to guess them. But yeah, sorry, crocs win. Now, for us this week, if you can go visit us on Patreon and think about supporting the podcast, a couple dollars a month, if enough people do that, help us pay the bills. You know, Angie and I are thinking about trying to get some better equipment. I do all the editing and mixing myself, so hopefully the audio is not too bad.
Yeah, Chris is a saint. He does it all. I just show up and talk.
Yeah, I know. But I need, you know, I'd like to get a soundboard to see if I could, you know, some of the interviews, maybe clean up the audio. But, you know, just visit us. You know, visit us. I think you can go on Patreon and just follow us, and then you get emails when we release stuff. And then please continue to subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't. You know, share on Facebook or other social media.
I think that's a really big one. Is in order to help us. I know when if you search animal or education podcast, like we come up, but it's just really hard to get the word out there. Yeah. And so if our fans can help us, tell a friend or share it on their page or review us, that always helps too. My goodness.
Yeah. No, but we love you. Thank you for sticking with us. And we will be back next week with a new species. We've got a bunch planned.
It's really, we've got a good lineup in the next couple weeks coming out. So it's really wonderful interviews coming.
Yeah. More interviews for sure. We're lining them up. So thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Everybody have a good night or day or whatever, wherever you live.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.